Stu Does America.
You know, there are good influences and bad influences in the world. You obviously have a lot of good people here at Blaze TV, for example, and we would ask you to subscribe to Blaze TV. It's a great group of people. And then you have terrible influences, like, for example, Jeff Fisher of Blaze TV, who has brought nothing but negativity and sorrow to everyone around him for his entire existence. Apparently, we start a new show. It's called Stu and Dave Do America. I mean, we haven't started it yet, starting in a couple weeks. We have a schedule, by the way. Let me walk you through that real quick. This is going to be our last week of doing Stu Does America kind of the way it is now. We're going to have a week off after that as they're building the sets and getting everything ready. And then the week after that, which I think is April 1st, I think is the day we're starting Stu and Dave Do America. So it's going to be really exciting. I hope you join us. It's going to be a lot of fun as we expand the family here. We do not expand the family to bring in Jeff Fisher, of course, because he's tormenting us, apparently. He heard that we had a $40 off situation here at Blaze TV. And him and Pat and I guess Keith, I don't know who's involved with it, probably Chris Cruz. Involved as well in some way, because he usually is when there's mayhem that's happening. But they decided to come up with a Pat Gray $41 off offer, which we're launching a new show here. We're trying to get the momentum going. We're trying to bring people on, and now they have a better deal than us? Absolutely not. That's why right now you can go to blazetv.com/stew, right? Is that what we're doing? blazetv.com. Use the code STUANDDAVE42. Why? Because we have $42 off. Why would you go to that Pat Gray $41 off offer? It makes no sense. You get the Stu and Dave 42. Get $42 off your Blaze TV subscription right now. And get ready for Stu and Dave Doing America starting on April 1st. We're very excited about it. Join now, blazetv.com. Stu and Dave 42 is the code. Okay, Christian Toto is going to be here. We put him through the torture of watching all the movies and watching the Oscars. We're impressed by his ability for resisting pain, and he is going to talk us through the garbage that was the Oscars last night. Is a Marco Rubio 2028 campaign gaining steam? We're going to look at that, and we're going to start, though, by doing the horrors of the Chinese EV industry. I was thinking about this today. This is the last week we're doing this show in this form, I guess, and I was thinking about how many shows have we done about electric vehicles? A lot. We've done a lot of shows, probably more than almost any other show that is in existence and has been running for the last 6 years like ours, because we check in on this industry often. We were told it's the biggest savior. It's going to save everyone's existence. And of course, the reason we're going to save our existence is, of course, global warming, but the environment in general. It's doing all these wonderful things for all these people, and it's making the world a better place. Now, as you may know, I've talked about this for years and years and years and years. I have no problem with electric vehicles. I have one. I have a Tesla. I like it. It's a great vehicle. We test drove a Tesla, Pat and I, years and years and years ago, and it was incredible. We were like, this is an amazing vehicle. There are really great things that are going on with electric vehicles. Forcing people into them, I'm totally against. Subsidizing their industry, I'm totally against. But look, a new technology that's competing with what we have, I think is a good thing. This is capitalism at its best, right? Like, you have a situation where a new technology comes around, tries to improve things. And by the way, electric vehicles have improved some things as it relates to gas-powered cars. Others, maybe not as much. It's for you to kind of decide and what feels right for you. And we wind up having both. I think it's the best of both worlds. But in reality, it's a decision you have to make. What fits your family best? Of course, what doesn't get covered about the electric vehicle industry is the underbelly of it. We're constantly told that gas is evil and dirty and oil is bad and combustion engines are the devil. But they never really take it from beginning to end. And one of the pieces of this that we've talked about for a very long time is looking at the entire life cycle of an electric vehicle, right? Not just how much emissions it uses after you have it in your garage, right? Because it's a zero emission vehicle. Of course, you're charging the battery, utilizing normally fossil fuels to charge it. So there's, of course, something there. But what is the whole life cycle? When you start looking at that, the electric vehicle for the environment winds up being a lot less impressive. Now, that's not why I buy an electric car. It's not why I'm interested in an electric car. I don't care what it does for the environment. I don't believe any of the nonsense that they say when it comes to environmental benefit. That's just the way I look at things. I just look, if I want something, if it's the better option and it fits my family, great. If it doesn't, fine. but I don't believe any of the hype. Let me give you the opposite of hype. This comes from the Washington Post, a big investigation which is getting almost no play in the media outside of the Washington Post, because if you were to do that, it would shine a negative light on the electric vehicle industry. But this is what the reality is around the world. They came to build China's EV future. Investigators found conditions akin to slavery. Now, you could say all you want that maybe electric vehicles improve the environment in some way. Again, I've looked at those claims in depth many, many times on this program. I'm not persuaded by them, frankly. But if what you're getting is this tiny environmental benefit from these cars, and in reality, you're also torturing workers, I don't know that that's a trade-off that the typical American would embrace, or anyone really around the world. Listen to the details of this investigation. We have a bunch of them. Over the course of a December 2024 investigation, Specialized Task Force identified dozens of labor infractions, interviewed at least 43 Chinese workers, inspected six housing facilities, scoured the work site, and uncovered what investigators described in subsequent reports as the construction and execution of a scheme to systematically violate workers' rights. The alleged scheme, as described in court documents, began in where else? China, where job postings and foremen issued false promises of good pay, usually more than $1,700 a month. Now, can you imagine earning up to $1,700 a month? Now, look, there are times in your life that $1,700 works out. But right now, we certainly in the United States don't look at it as a high-level salary. Many places around the world, they do. And it's important to remember what the world really looks like. It's not everything that we complain about. We're not complaining about it in a global context. A lot of times we're complaining about it in an American context. Do we think that it's fair here? Well, we're not comparing it against here all the time. We should also be comparing it against the globe. And even the worst conditions here, frankly, are much better than what goes on in a lot of these places. Anyway, continuing. At the Brazilian border, workers were brought in on visas sponsored by Chinese electric automaker BYD, which, look, let's be honest about it, sounds not like a car maker, but like an underwear brand. I don't know why every time I see BYD, I think they're making underwear. They're not. They're making cars. Anyway, they identified them incorrectly as specialized technicians rather than manual laborers. The alleged deception reached its culmination in ramshackle, improvised hovels sprinkled throughout someplace where laborers were packed in by the dozen. They didn't speak Portuguese. Many of their passports, investigators found, had been locked inside a drawer at the job site. Oops. Most of their pay, around half what was promised, prosecutors said, was deposited in China, not Brazil. Some of the housing structures were patrolled by an armed guard, according to investigators. Now, I will say, in case for those who are maybe skeptical of a cryptocurrency, this is one of the things that is people are held up by around the world. How do you get access to your money, right? What China was doing was saying, hey, yeah, we're going to pay you all this money. We're just going to deposit it in an account that you can't access because you're halfway around the world. How does that do for you? Now, of course, if you're getting that money in a cryptocurrency, you can get it anywhere in the world. This is one of the things. Forget, you know, everyone gets excited about Bitcoin at $100,000. Of course, you know, I'm very excited when those things happen. But one of the things that has been actually cured by cryptocurrency is the idea that you no longer have to be victim of massive inflation inside your country. As long as somewhere in the world has some control over inflation, of course, even though the United States has had its problems, certainly much more under control than many of these other places, people can just buy these stable coins and be able to lock into something of actual value that you that while their currency is going through the roof and, you know, they have to go to the bank every day to buy bread, that stuff doesn't need to happen anymore because basically of cryptocurrency, a massive innovation. And if that's all cryptocurrency ever achieves, it's still massive. It's an incredible achievement that does not get enough talk. I'm just going to point that out. Okay, going on with the investigation. Their food was prepared in an improvised kitchen in the garage amid industrial vermin. They never seemed to do anything for fun. All they did was work. I mean, that's no surprise. You try to limit the amount of vermin around your, you know, when you're cooking, at least try to keep the vermin out. Chinese men were inhabiting practically every square inch. Most slept without mattresses. Trash lay everywhere. Food was stored on the ground in one of the buildings. 31 laborers shared a single bathroom. Must smell nice. It was coated with an excess of sludge, government inspectors reported. I don't know what the sludge was made out of, nor do I want to. Just want to make sure everyone knows. The workers enlisted by BYD to build its Keystone factory in the Americas had been forced, they wrote, into conditions that recalled slavery. In a civil suit, authorities alleged BYD and his partners had preyed upon 220 vulnerable laborers, some of whom were illiterate, duping them with false promises of high pay. They were then pressed into punishing labor, from which they could not escape. Many had their passports confiscated, prosecutors alleged, and much of their promised pay was withheld. At night, prosecutors alleged they were locked inside fetid dormitories, patrolled at times by armed guards. This is the price of your environmentalism, boys and girls. This is what's happening all over the place. Because, again, to make these things, and BYD is making these vehicles incredibly cheaply. This is not the way that Tesla is doing business by any means. But there are companies that do it this way. We're used to this type of thing from places like China. They can get these prices way, way down. And they're building that on the backs of people like this. In a letter to local authorities shared with the Washington Post, New York-based nonprofit China Labor Watch alleged clear indicators of forced labor, including 12-hour workdays and granting rest only when it rained. 12-hour workday is actually, I feel like China's getting a little weak with that. I mean, 12? We're doing that in America by choice. 12 hours? What are we talking about here? Now, I'm just so you know, right now, I'm up to an hour a day. A full hour. No, not a full hour because we have commercials. Like a 46-minute day. Every day. Well, not every day. Just Monday through Thursday. And, you know, obviously there's vacation time. You got to take that out. Good weekends, I'm not doing it, or Fridays. But soon, there are going to be 2 hours a day. Well, not two full hours, but two different things that present on television as an hour. So I want you to think not only about the people in Brazil being tortured, but what about me? Think about it, as Jeffy would say. None of the native Brazilian workers had ever seen laborers work like the Chinese. They often arrive around 5 a.m., well before the traditional hours, one BYD staffer said, crammed into small cars so tightly that some were relegated to the trunk. That's suboptimal. You don't want to be going to work in the trunk. Who's the person who loses the bet and has to be stuck in the trunk on the way to work? That sucks. On the job, they took risks that Brazilian workers said they could scarcely believe, braving dangerous heights without safety equipment or working perilously close to heavy machinery. Some donned little protective gear and walked around barefoot. It's amazing what you can achieve when you don't care how many human beings you throw into the machinery. It is really, I mean, like, it's incredible. Like, if you're pouring, the foundation for a giant dam somewhere, and you don't mind it being filled up with 100, 200 people, you can move really fast and get a lot of work done. If you don't mind the laborers showing up to work in the trunk, it's amazing what you can achieve. It's my policy. We are, by the way, for Stu and Dave Doing America, importing all workers in the trunks of cars, and that's our guarantee. It's the Stu and Dave guarantee. Brazilians, three of them, said they saw Chinese bosses strike their subordinates. Video reviewed by the Post appeared to show one foreman violently kicking a bottle at a worker as he laid on the ground. Reach for comment, the foreman said the worker had laid down deliberately following a disagreement. Well, I mean, if he's going to lay down deliberately, you got to kick a bottle at him, right? What else do you do? There's no other solution that I can think of. According to labor inspectors, a metal worker's hand was crushed in an accident. One of his fingers was amputated. Another laborer broke his left leg, an open fracture that same Sunday. A few days later, a carpenter suffered a mishap with a chainsaw and lost full function in his right hand. He later told investigators he'd been exhausted. This is the reality of this situation. And we can, you know, sit here and sort of make fun of the craziness of this, but these are real people. These are real people who showed up believing they had good jobs and instead were basically tortured to cut down on the increase of 0.9 degrees Celsius that we've had over the past century. Does that seem worth it to you? There's a marked difference between the conduct of the Brazilian and Chinese managers. The ones who didn't treat the Chinese people like human beings were the Chinese themselves. The Chinese companies involved in the project have denied the slavery allegations and deemed them culturally insensitive. Yeah, I mean, that's like, that's mean for you to say that the Chinese people are treating their own people terribly. You're just criticizing the Chinese culture, which is wrong, even when they do things like that. We can't admit that American culture or even Western culture generally is better than that. Instead, we have to act like it's all the same, like workers coming together and coming in trunks and getting their, you know, appendages lopped off at work. That's totally normal. We're supposed to accept that because culture, you can't judge that. You can't judge whether one culture is superior over another. No, no. On October 9th, 2025, one of the factories, where an estimated 1,400 were already working, had begun production. The budget electric car model under assembly, the Dolphin Mini, appeared to be poised as the next eco-sport. And BYD, which had quickly become Brazil's most popular electric automaker, selling more than 110,000 hybrid and electric cars in 2025 alone, said it had doubled the factory's production goals and would now target international markets across the region. Now, remember, this is a situation where Brazil does not like Elon Musk very much. It's not really a market that they're able to compete in fairly. So they're leaning on the Chinese. And if you think that's a bad thing, remember that for just a few minutes. Remember that instinct for a few minutes. Is it a good thing that Chinese vehicles are going to be coming into your country? How does that work? How does that deal with the workers that are building them? China has replaced the United States as South America's top trading partner, expanding its annual total trade from $8 billion in 2000 to more than $365 billion in 2024, according to the World Trade Organization. One of South America's largest ports in Peru was built with Chinese money. Chinese funds are bringing a metro line to Colombia and powering a hydroelectric revolution in the Amazon forest. And now its signature automaker has leapfrogged Tesla in global sales, owing its rapid expansion in Brazil. And if you worry about how all this is working out for BYD, you're thinking to myself, oh gosh, well, they're treating these employees terribly. I hope this doesn't hurt their sales. Good news, everybody. Here is the car sales in Brazil. None in 2022, up to about 20,000 in 2023, about 75,000 in 2024, and well above 100,000 in 2025. So things are going swimmingly for BYD around the world, which is just great. In fact, BYD shares are surging the most in 13 months on overseas sales orders. People are embracing what I just talked about. They're giving it a big bear hug. Everyone loves the tortured workers that get grinded up in the machinery as you get to lower your eco guilt level wherever you happen to be. Now, you might say, BYD, isn't that an underwear brand? Yes, I think it might be. I think there was one that was something like BYD. But if you might think, I haven't seen any BYD cars, why? What's the point? Well, the main reason we haven't seen any BYD cars here in America is because we basically have tariffed them out of existence in America. Now, there's an argument as to whether this is a good choice or not. Tariffs I'm not a fan of, as you know. The most defensible tariffs are probably the ones that we put on China. And the argument, and this is, by the way, a Biden policy, not a Trump policy, but a Biden policy where they basically just jacked up electric vehicle tariffs to the moon, so you could never import one from China. That's the policy we currently have. Trump has continued that policy, but it is a Biden-era policy. Now, the reason for that was because, honestly, we kind of, I think for the first time, said we're not going to be able to compete. We can't compete with that. And so we don't want them here. There are other issues, of course, the human rights disaster I just talked about, safety concerns, all sorts of things that are problematic with these brands. A lot of them are made very, very cheaply. But again, people do like inexpensive things. We buy a lot of our stuff from China. It's a different thing when you've got a multi-thousand pound vehicle rolling down the road at high speeds, whether you trust that Chinese build or not. Some of them, though, do seem to be legitimately impressive. Some of the cars that China is pumping out right now. Now, one of the reasons why we haven't seen Chinese cars here in the United States is because of the trade policy, not just our trade policy with China, but our trade policy with lots of our surrounding partners. Because we've been open with places like Canada, and had a good exchange with Canada. We've been more tossing our cars back and forth that are made in various countries. And that's been the entire supply of the Canadian market. What Canada is now saying is something a little bit different. BYD is now mulling a new plant in Canada and the acquisition of a global car maker. 2024, BYD paused its plans to export electric vehicles from China to Canada after Canada followed the U.S. and imposed additional import tariffs of 100% on electric vehicles from China. However, Canada has since negotiated an EV deal with China, planning to initially allow up to 49,000 Chinese electric vehicles into the country annually at a reduced tariff rate of 6.1%. Political shift has prompted BYD to reconsider its strategy for entering the Canadian electric vehicle market. With the market reopening, BYD is now exploring not only imports, but also local production. Now, why? Why are they doing that? A big part of this has been the back and forth fighting between Donald Trump now and the Canadian government as far as tariffs go, how Chinese EVs could cruise in the American market. As Canada begins importing the EVs, U.S. residents in border cities like Detroit and Buffalo, New York, may see their northern neighbors at the wheel. Or American tourists visiting Canada may experience brands like, what is it, Xiaomi? I don't know. Again, some word I'm not supposed to pronounce it. Leap Motor and BYD while taking a ride share. It's a situation that the U.S. and Canada sought to avoid for years, worried that the introduction of China's low-cost, high-tech EVs would undermine domestic automakers and lead to Chinese surveillance. But President Trump's 25% tariffs on Canadian autos and Canadian auto parts has scrambled the North American auto market. So we got in this fight with them. Canada was like, well, we got to have these cars imported somehow. You guys are giving us these high rates. We're going to work with China. And that's been one of the big problems and one of the reasons I don't like the tariff policy of the current president. You know, again, he's done a lot of really good things that I do like. But what happens here is when you wind up going after all of these countries and they don't see you as a reliable partner anymore, they look around and try to find somebody who is. And Canada is looking around. They're saying, well, we're not dealing as much with America because of all these tariffs. They keep coming higher and lower and higher and lower. And I don't want to deal with that anymore. What if we make a deal with China, who will keep it at a consistent rate? Because they don't care. I mean, they just want to get this stuff out and ship it out and start taking over these other markets. Long term, it might be a bad move for Canada, and certainly not something that I'm looking forward to, having lots of these vehicles around in the United States. Though I do feel like we should just be able to beat them. You know, for the United States of America, we should just do things better. Like the competition doesn't scare me from these Chinese automakers as it does some others. That being said, it is important to recognize why the downsides of some of these policies. It's possible that in the end of this, we'll see like a bunch of manufacturing jobs here in the United States, and maybe that trade-off is worth it. So far, we haven't seen that. It's possible in the future that we will. And if we do, maybe this will all be worth it. But these are the risks. When you start becoming a difficult partner with people who want to rely on you for friendly commerce, they start looking to other people. And while China is certainly not a good partner when it comes to this stuff, they do aggressively want to sell, and they will make deals because they want their stuff to be pumped out into foreign markets. So that's kind of the place where we are right now. It's a little bit uncomfortable, but it's possible that we will see some of these cars appearing in the United States and certainly around the border relatively soon, in the next year or two. We'll see. Of course, President Trump might wind up renegotiating some of these things, and you know that might make it go away. But it's just a very unsteady ground that we're all walking on right now. Okay, speaking of unsteady, I watched some of the Oscars last night. It was not pleasant. Christian Toto watched them all. It must have been very, very unpleasant, and I feel bad for him. But he's going to tell us about his pain coming up next. I'm joined once again by Christian Toto, film critic and host of the Hollywood in Toto podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Christian, appreciate you coming back on the program.
My pleasure.
You watched the Oscars last night, of course. I think a lot of it, I want to talk about the movies here in a second, but let's just start with the annoying stuff. Like, for example, let me just read from this particular article here from the Hollywood
Report.
This
could take a while.
Before revealing that sentimental value won the Oscar for Best International Feature with of each film, Javier Bardem, who is also wearing a 2003 Iraq War protest bin, began with "No War and Free Palestine." And it's fascinating because we just went through a very long period where the debate was, do we get involved in the Ukraine war? And I don't remember anybody doing any our involvement in Ukraine. None of that matters. But when it's a Republican as president, then they all have their pins.
Yeah, if you want a consistency, look elsewhere. And, you know, listen, I would have a microscopic level of respect for Javier if he spoke out against the Hamas atrocities or about the Iranian regime slaughtering its own people. But he didn't, and he won't. So that's just who he is. And, you know, it was almost lazy of him to kind of get up there and bark those specific words like a doll, you pulled a string. Free Palestine, free Palestine. He's not to be taken seriously. I guess for me, the frustrating part is, first of all, he's a terrific actor. I never want to take away that from him. But there is not one journalist on the planet who has access to him who might ask him a tough but fair question about some of his positions. Not one. I would do it. I don't have access to him. And that drives me bananas. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, I think the safest place for the American people to be is, I think, where they are, which is we don't really care about what they say about any of these issues, right? It's entertaining to us once a year to, like, watch and watch them make idiots of themselves and point out their inconsistencies. But in reality, just like Colin Kaepernick, like, there's no influence for me about what their positions are. I respect the work that they do. I think this hurts them a little bit more than in other industries because I'm trying to picture them being something else. You know, I'm trying to lose myself in their movies, and it's difficult to do that. Where sporting events is not really that difficult. Even music, I don't think it's that difficult. Film, it's the hardest.
Jennifer Lawrence said something similar recently, and she's not really often coherent, but she was in this particular interview, and she talked about how, you know, the more I talk about politics or culture or this or that, the more people struggle to disconnect that with who I'm playing on screen. I think that's smart. I think the actors would be better served if there was a back and forth, a debate, some sort of challenge to what they have to say, because then they'd have a sharper presentation, as is they don't. But it is maddening, and we just look at them and we roll our eyes. And I, the ultimate irony is I ended my review of the show last night at Hollywood and Toto with this. They wake up this morning thinking, oh my gosh, we just made a whole chunk of the country even angrier at us, if that were possible. And we're in an industry that's contracting and maybe collapsing. Was that the right thing to do? I wonder if some are actually thinking about that. I hope they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I kind of like that Jennifer Lawrence moment, because, you know, that's what she did, right? She said all these things. She made it the most important thing in her life for a while and then kind of realized it didn't do anything. And then when you have new information, Christian, like what you're supposed to do is address that information, maybe change your mind. And she did. I think that's a positive. That's all I'm asking. Yeah. I'm not asking for them to become like, you know, libertarians on the economy. I'm just interested in them. You're just leaving us alone a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think I want them to be smarter. I think I want them to be more consistent, morally speaking. If you didn't say a word about October 7th, then I don't think I want to hear from you about almost anything, because that was such an atrocity. It's really frustrating. And also, think time and place. You know, if an actor makes a movie about school shootings and he or she is accepting an award, you know, maybe that's the time to share some of your thoughts on that, or that's seemingly relevant. You know, you've done some work, you did the research. I get it. You've got something to say. And a lot of this is just jamming in their virtue signals and their thoughts. And it just comes out of the blue. And I have to really blame Conan O'Brien, because I think in a way he kind of gave them permission with his monologue when he went there multiple times throughout the show. I think if he had just been entertaining, which he started out as, by the way, the show began well. Maybe that doesn't happen like it did, but it did. And it's going to chase more people away and alienate more people. And more people will be angry at Hollywood, where it's a business where they need everyone, not just the left, us too. They need us.
They really do. They're really important. Let me change gears a little bit and talk about Timothy Chalamet. My instinct here, Christian, is to not like him because he's like the new thing and everyone's talking about him all the time. Like, I just have this, you know, I don't know, probably somewhat irrational idea inside of me that everything that like that approaches me in the way Timothy Chalamet has, I don't like. So I lay that out on the, at the beginning. But he was favored for this Best Actor award. I have not seen the movie, but everyone says he's really, really good in it. And he seemingly lost this award because he did an interview. You tell me if I'm overblowing this, but he did an interview right as all of these details, as the voting was going on with the Oscars, where he basically said, hey, we don't want film to turn into this thing like, you know, opera or ballet, where there's just a bunch of people who love it that, you know, keep it alive, but there's not really that big of an appetite for it overall. It's just sort of on life support. A statement that, to me, is overwhelmingly, blatantly true, right? Like, this is absolutely a true sentiment that, opera and ballet, like, yeah, there's some big fans, there's some big organizations that pump them up, but, like, there's no big audience for these things anymore, at least in pop culture or public culture. And because of that, he was seen as anti-artist, and he seemingly lost his award for best actor over this. It seems incredibly petty, and I shouldn't be surprised that Hollywood is petty, but I mean, it does seem to be a little ridiculous.
It's a lot. It's very ridiculous. By the way, I had similar feelings towards Chalamet, Flavor of the Month. I'm exhausted by him already. Then I started watching some of his films, and he's really good.
Yeah.
And he's flat out terrific in Marty Supreme, and I think he was robbed. But listen, Michael B. Jordan's very good too. But the bigger issue is that the more I look at the Oscars, the more I study the Oscar season, the award season mania, the more I realize it's so increasingly rare that it's about the performance. It's about the gestures. It's about the interviews. Did you say the right thing? Did you not say certain things? Did you insert in certain communities? And the reason why the ballet and opera situation has been ricocheting across everywhere in the last 2-3 weeks is because, like you said, it's partially true. I'm not insulting those art forms. They are not populist in the way that maybe they once were. And you speak the truth, it hurts, and people flinch. And people are flinching over what he said. But more importantly, who cares? He can come out and say, I love Palestine. He gave the best performance of the year. And if I'm a voter, I'd vote for that. This whole pettiness going on where, oh, the one battle after another wasn't really proper to the Black experience. Just stop this. It's a movie. You like it, you don't, and judge it by its artistic merit. Period. But we can't even do that now.
And that's the thing with the Oscars, Christian. It's like, if there is a utility to this program that we still watch it in big numbers, even though they go down and down every single year, it's still outside of the NFL. I mean, really probably the most uniting thing that we have as far as viewing. And if there is a utility to it, it's to go through and say, excuse me, hey, America, sure, you saw, you know, the Super Mario movie, which, you know, you probably had lots of fun with. You saw Minecraft. But, like, there's a bunch of movies out there that you probably didn't see, didn't have big audiences. We want to draw you to the best of that. And if we can't trust them, not even their decision-making process, which, of course, we're going to disagree with, but we can't even trust they're making the decisions based on whether the movies were good or not, what value does this have?
Completely agree. This night is the ultimate 3.5 hour long advertisement for Hollywood and the movies. It's all about love of the movies. These were the greatest of the year, the greatest performances. Come, honor, celebrate them. And if you didn't hear about them, well, now's your chance. It is a commercial for the industry, and they can't seem to wrap their brains around that. Instead, they push people away. They make divisive speeches. They use it as their bully pulpit. They treat it as anything except an advertisement for their industry, which is under severe stress. We don't go to the movies as much anymore. Streaming is reigning supreme. You've got the threat of AI coming sooner than you think. There are so many reasons why this industry should be scared to death of their future. And yet here they are, the biggest night of the year, and they're going to insult you. Not smart.
Not smart. Okay, Christian, before we go, let's do a little version of the Christian Toto Oscars. You know, speak to an audience that I think likes movies and I think is willing to go see a movie that wasn't, you know, massively advertised to them if it's good. Are there some out there? I really wanted to see Marty Supreme. I haven't seen it yet. I've heard, you know, pretty good things about it. Certainly Chalamet's performance, excellent. What are a few of the kind of secret movies that actually we should bother with?
Well, this one's real escapism, and I thought it was just beautifully done. It's called Send Help. It may be kind of fading from theaters now, maybe still around a few theaters. It'll probably go on video on demand very soon. It's two people crash on an island. They have to survive. One was the boss. The other person was his underling, but now she has the power because she's actually kind of a hobbyist when it comes to survival techniques. It's from director Sam Raimi, who's always done a lot of fun, interesting, eclectic stuff. little gory at times. If you don't like that, I get understand that. But I just found that just wildly entertaining. And we don't get a lot of wildly entertaining movies. So that's one I'd point people to. Listen, at any given time, there's good stuff out there. Sometimes you have to dig a little deeper, you know, but be a little inquisitive, you know, check in with your neighbors, people you like and trust. If you have a neighbor whose taste you admire, check in with them. It's often the best way to do it, because sadly, a lot of my film critic peers will judge based on politics alone. That's not the right way to do it. I had some issues with One Battle After Another. I think it's morally repugnant, but it's entertaining and it's flawed, but fascinating. And I can't lie about that. It's not Best Picture for sure. But, you know, a lot of critics just say, oh, it's got this theme or that theme. Giving it the old thumbs up, you can't operate that way.
Yeah, let me because we're doing this prediction market show, and we're playing a little bit with the Oscars. One of the picks was for One Battle After Another to win Best Picture, largely because I just feel like one of the ways you can look at the Best Picture nomination when it comes to politics is, okay, what's the thing of the moment for the left?
Yeah.
Where, like, in 2021, Sinners, I think, absolutely wins Best Pictures because it's, you know, it's criticizing, it's a racial critique, right? Where One Battle After Another is like, hey, we should have a liberal, terrorist group go out and try to kill everybody who's conservative. And it's like, well, that's more the vibe of the moment, I feel like, sadly. That was partially my reason. For picking One Battle After Another. Is this a good way? Should I look at this in the future to inform my predictions?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're smart about that completely. As soon as I saw that movie, I thought this is going to win Best Picture. It's a lock. And by the way, the one thing it should win is the Oscar for grabbing the progressive zeitgeist and the perfect moment, because that's exactly what One Battle did. It is about Antifa-like attacks on the U.S. government trying to free illegal immigrants. I mean, kudos to Paul Thomas Anderson. His Oscar should be for predicting the near future, because these movies aren't made overnight. It takes months and months and months to get going. But somehow it just coalesced with what we're going through right now, and also getting ICE agents shot and attacked. So, you know, good on you, Paul Thomas. That was really inspiring. You made a movie like that.
It's just so sad. It's so sad. But hey, if you're going to win, what do you have, 14 nominations or something before this? If it takes that long... You got to make sure you nail it. And he nailed the zeitgeist on that one. Christian Toto, film critic, host of a Hollywood in Toto podcast that you should definitely subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. Christian, I mean, thank you for putting in the work, watching all these movies, watching the Oscars. It's not easy. It's very difficult duty, and I appreciate you doing it.
3.5 hours, I'll never get back.
Donald Trump says that Cuba, he's going to kind of see what happens, right? He's got talks going on with them right now. There's some action possible after Iran. He said Cuba wants to make a deal. And I think we will pretty soon either make a deal or do whatever we have to do. Now, like, it's funny because forever, we've talked about the idea of the madman president, where, like, that's not a knock. This goes back decades and decades of this idea of, like, somebody who... Gosh, you don't think they're going to do anything, but, like, they might just do it, and we better take them seriously because they got a little twitch in their eye. That's Donald Trump, certainly, and he's proven that he will do things when he believes it's the right move. Cuba does seem like its focus. It's certainly a focus of Marco Rubio. It's probably the most important thing to Marco Rubio, who obviously has a lot of influence right now in the administration. So something probably is going to happen with Cuba. Ideally, they just are less insane. I don't know. We will see. We'll see what happens with Iran. I think, you know, part of the overseas adventurism a little bit with Donald Trump right now is that these things keep working out and they're going well. When one doesn't, that's going to be the real test as to whether he continues to do these types of things. We will watch that go closely as it goes closely. Some GOP donors are now plotting a shadow draft Rubio 2028. Thing. I don't know if this is real as far as Rubio's interest in it. I mean, Rubio definitely wants to be president of the United States. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think at least right now, is being very careful to not start any sort of debate about whether him or J.D. Vance are the right choice. He's saying they have a great relationship. They're very, very close. There's a big Vance-Rubio contingency out there. Will Rubio actually run for president, though? That is the question. And I don't believe that necessarily, but it is possible. At least as things stand right now, you think Rubio's probably going to stand out of it because Vance is going to be the obvious choice. But you never know. As we get closer, sometimes battles happen, and you know, things like this don't help, right? This is the stuff that boils up underneath the underbelly there and causes problems for these candidates. We'll see if that goes forward. And also, hopeful 2028 candidate Jasmine Crockett is in the news. Actually, someone who worked for her security is in the news, as he was killed. This is a bizarre story. Legal name of fugitive killed by Dallas SWAT revealed had history of arrest before Jasmine Crockett security role. He went into a garage. He locked himself in a car, pulling a gun on police, and was shot and killed. And he had recently been in the security detail for Jasmine Crockett because, of course, obviously, this is the reality. By the way, I will say, in the news right now, this is the time to strike where the iron's hot. Jasmine Crockett 2028. First of all, the merch is available at studiosmerch.com. But more importantly, she needs to launch this campaign so we have multiple years of her running for all the entertainment value that will provide. So please, Jasmine, don't wait. Launch today, Jasmine Crockett 2028. Aaron Judge has said the World Baseball Classic has surpassed the World Series in importance. He says it's bigger and better than the World Series. The passion that these fans have representing their country, representing some of their favorite players, there's nothing like it. I mean, look, World Baseball Classic is pretty cool. I mean, I don't follow it as closely as a lot of other people do. But, it's not the World Series. The World Series is the World Series. I will say I'm kind of against the World Series right now after what happened to my wonderful Toronto Blue Jays last year and the most torturous loss of my entire sport life. That being said, no, not yet. And by the way, this is easy for a Yankee to say because it's been a very long time since they've been there. And I think that might be part of this. Anyway, Charlie Woods finished last at the Junior Invitational. 36 golfers were there. He finished last. This is a little bit weird, though, isn't it? I mean, Charlie Woods is Tiger Woods' kid, by the way, if you don't know that. He's ranked 20th in the juniors. He's very, very good. So he had a bad freaking tournament. Like, why is that even? It's kind of weird that a 17-year-old is getting reported on like it's this big deal. Like, there's a Reuters headline about a 17-year-old finishing last. Kind of cruel, is it not? All right, back in a second. It has begun. The discount wars have. Mm-hmm, it's true. You may have heard Pat Gray's exclusive promo code, which I will not repeat here because it's disgusting in every way. But yes, he had a promo code or something that gave you $41 off, whatever, as if that's some big deal. Well, what they don't have over at Pat Gray is the discount code that gives you $42 off. We have that. Stu and Dave 42 is the discount code. Stu and Dave 42. It's kind of to celebrate the brand new show starting on April 1st. Stu and Dave Do America. We're going to be expanding this little show here, and we're going to have Dave on every day. They're building the set right over there as we speak. We're going to finish up this week on Stu Does America, and then next week we'll be off and then launch the new thing the week after. We're very excited about that. Dave's awesome. If you don't know Dave, he's hilarious. He's been on the show. Really, really funny guy, and has quite the life experience that I can't wait to delve into on a day-to-day basis. But it's blazetv.com. The code is StuAndDave42, the best discount you can get. It's better than anything Pat Gray has, that's for sure. We'll see you tomorrow.